Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Bow, 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 bow. 2000 party over, oops, out of time. Bow, 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 bow. Tonight we're gonna party like the cards in your 99. Bow, 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 bow. Cards in your 99. Bow, bow,
bow, bow, bow. You know we're taking a risk whenever we cover someone like Prince. What's up, everybody? You're watching / listening to the In the 99 review of the cards from Midnight Hunt. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. Yep, today we're going to be talking about all the cards that are not legendary creatures and can therefore go in the 99 of your decks. We're going to say, we're going to talk about the ones we think we're going to make the biggest splash in the format of Commander, but before we get into all of that, we got to talk about our brand new sponsor, which is channelfireball.com/command. You know, we've been talking for the last couple of weeks about the upcoming launch of the Channel Fireball Marketplace, and now we can talk about it as if it has already launched, because it is here.
It's finally here.
It's gone live. So Channel Fireball has a new thing they're doing. The way they're selling singles and stuff like that is on their marketplace, Channel Fireball Marketplace. And this is really great. They're doing some things that nobody else is really doing. They're vetting the sellers on their marketplace, so you know you're going to be dealing with professionals. They require a business license to, like, to even be a seller on their site. You can't just be like a random person that's selling, you know, your own singles, which I really like, because listen, for other marketplaces, eBay and things like that, we know that sometimes you get service that is not great. Like they put, you know, they don't package the cards very well sometimes when they send them, or it takes forever to get to you, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And there's no hate on people that want to sell cards individually.
Not at all.
If you're on eBay or anywhere else, but you know, as Magic players, we place orders sometimes in larger quantities, and having some assurance that goes along with it is important, especially because it's peace of mind. I've had a lot of packages disappear. In fact, just today I was trying to figure out one that was delivered apparently back in August, but I never saw it. So stuff with verified shipping, stuff with tracking, all of those things come with dealing with people that are in a more professional setting.
For sure, for sure, for sure. And one thing I also like about the fact that, you know, the vendors have business licenses, that means a lot of them are LGSs, so that you do get to support local gaming stores by ordering through Channel Fireball Marketplace. So definitely go over there and check it out. They're giving away a bunch of stuff, too, for the first month. Of course, encouraging people to try the service for the first time.
Yeah.
So, you know, you may as well just be entered to win free stuff like signed foil promo soul rings that Jimmy and I, we signed a bunch of them and sent them over to Channel Fireball, so you have a chance to win those.
That's what we call value.
That's what we call value. And then when you get the cards back from Channel Fireball Marketplace, you want them to stay in really good condition.
Good segue.
And the best way to protect all of your game pieces is with Ultra Pro products. Eclipse sleeves, some of the best sleeves on the market. We've got Ultra Pro play mats here in front of us. We always use those. Keep the cards clean. You don't want to just be playing them on the sidewalk like I used to do when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, right on the gravel. You know, even if you are playing it on the gravel, if you put it in a sleeve, it'll have a much higher chance of sustaining zero damage.
That's true. Eclipse sleeves are really sturdy. I would, you know, I think I'd still use a play mat, though. Yeah. But and then, of course, you know, they got Satin Tower deck boxes, Mythic Collection stuff. That's the embroidered high class material stuff. So Ultra Pro really is the best way to protect all your game pieces.
Yep. And all the greatest art as well from Magic. And the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We love our patrons. We talk to them on Discord every single day. They get to see all episodes of Game Nights and Extra Turns a day early, ad-free. So if you want to be part of that cool crowd, go on over to patreon.com/commandzone, and we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. So this week's episode is dedicated to Elias Shank. Wow, 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 wow.
Elias, you rock. you rock like Prince. Man, that's a pretty high compliment.
Yeah, that's probably the highest compliment we've ever paid to anyone. All right, let's move on into the 99 review of Midnight Hunt. Now, we're doing things a tiny bit differently this time around. Normally, we go and cover as many of the cards as we can in every single niche category of this goes in this deck. Here's this niche strategy that only works in one way, but maybe this card works for it.
It ends up being like 3 or 4 videos in the past.
Yeah, and we all know we're getting that burnout just as much as you are in terms of the set reviews. So today we're going to actually just be focusing as much as we can on the cards that we think are genuinely the most interesting or the closest to a Commander staple, and maybe a couple of fringe cards that maybe look a little better than they look.
Yeah, we're just not going to talk about cards that are pretty obvious to us, at least. So like, you don't need us to tell you that like the Zombie Lord goes in the Zombie deck, or that something with an ETB goes in the Blink deck. Obviously, those things are true. So we're really just going to concentrate on what we think are kind of the important cards you're going to probably see very often, or a few things where it's sort of questionable. They're hard to evaluate.
Yeah, exactly. And we want to continue that discussion of the cards that we didn't talk about online. So hit us up in the comments, Twitter, everywhere else. And that's a great place to bring up things that maybe we missed or glossed over. And I think that's a better way to sort of cover things that are more niche anyway.
Yeah, we're always looking for your feedback. You know, we're trying something new here. If it's something you like or don't like, let us know. And definitely continue the conversation about cards we didn't talk about or cards we did.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start off with the returning and new mechanics here. We've covered this a little bit in our other reviews for like the multicolored, so we'll go through it fast. The first new mechanic is Coven. This just cares about you having three creatures with different powers on the battlefield. And then sometimes it's like when you attack, it'll
get lifelink.
Yeah. Sometimes it also it activates or it enables an activated ability. It's not always on attack or anything like that. But it's basically just like, do you have three creatures? Do they have different power? Okay, you can do this thing.
Yep. If you watch the Game Night's game, Voxie's commander was all about this and let her draw humans from her deck for doing so.
Yep.
The next new mechanic is the Daybound, Nightbound cycle. So it's a new way that to thematically work with the werewolves and the wolves that are in this set. And it's a card that when cards will say Nightbound or Daybound, and when that card ends the battlefield, it creates the day-night cycle, and then you track it for the rest of the game. If it's day, you don't cast any spells during your turn. When you pass the turn, it turns to night. And then the cards will flip as well or enter on that side. And if it's nighttime, you cast two spells to turn it back to day.
We go through the Daybound, Nightbound rulings. It can get a little intricate on the fringes, so you might want to watch that for clarity on how it works. I wanted to note one-off werewolves, like just a regular deck and you're just going to put one werewolf in it, they don't tend to be very good because in a multiplayer situation, you have three other players that can kind of control the day-night cycle and can
cast spells.
or choose not to, or whatever. Right. And so it's a lot harder for you to like pass the turn and have it come back to you on whatever day or night that you want.
Yeah.
So in general, you want an entire deck that's focused around controlling the day-night cycle, has cards in there that says don't let things transform or, you know, let you choose or whatever. So in general, we're not going to talk a lot about werewolves on this episode because they're only good in werewolf decks for the most part.
Yeah. So it goes. Another new mechanic is Decayed. It's a new keyword that makes you sacrifice the creature at the end of combat when they attack. So almost always this ability only appears on 2/2 black zombie creature tokens. And we play Limited now. Do you like Decayed?
I don't, actually. I think I was misevaluating it a little bit before having played with it, in that I think Decayed makes the creature significantly less powerful than it would be if it didn't have Decayed. In my mind, it was pretty close.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the fact that it can't block is another part of Decayed. And that is easy to gloss over. The fact that it can't block is really big. And the fact that it just goes away if you attack with it one time.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. So it does make... I think Decayed Zombies are like not even worth an entire card.
Yeah.
Not even worth a very much portion of a card. Whereas a 2/2 zombie kind of is close.
The Decayed that we do like the most of is on Gisa. We talked about in the monocolor review, because she brings back any creature that dies with Decayed. So you can just get those ETBs or have a Consecrated Sphinx just sitting there and you don't need to attack with it.
All right, and then the final mechanic is a returning one, is Flashback. It just allows you to cast the spell, almost always an instant or sorcery, from your graveyard for an alternate cost. Usually it costs more to flash it back. So that just means you can use your spell twice. All right, let's get into the cards here. We're going to start with the new Planeswalkers.
Hooray.
There are three of them.
Okay, the first one is one that people are probably sick of seeing, but you know what? He controls time itself, so I guess he can be in any set he wants to. It's Teferi Who Slows the Sunset. 2 a white and a blue for a 4 loyalty Planeswalker with 3 abilities. Plus 1. This was a long one. Choose up to 1 target artifact, up to 1 target creature, and up to 1 target land. Untap the chosen permanent you control. Tap the chosen permanent you don't control. You gain 2 life. That's dandy. Minus two, look at the top three cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. And the minus seven, you get an emblem with untap all permanents you control during each opponent's untap step, and you draw a card during each opponent's draw step. Wow. Teferi, who has way too much text as normal. So
that's way too much text. Yeah. Is this Teferi, I think, on the surface, doesn't look as strong as some of the past Teferis, but it can still do some really powerful things and can still sort of combo off. It's interesting how you can target your opponent's stuff
to tap
and it'll tap it down, or your stuff to untap it. I like that flexibility. Probably makes it good in like stacked decks with Winter Orb and Static Orb and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's where I think this is the best, is because you are untapping artifacts, creatures, and lands. So combo-tastic.
Think of like Stasis. You know, you could untap your land so you can keep paying for Stasis and then tap down an artifact and a creature from your opponents to just kind of keep them from being able to do anything. Like, even if they get something out, you tap it down and now it won't tap.
Rough.
So yeah, that's of course stacks is one way to go. There's also like combo-y stuff like you mentioned. It kind of can do similar things to what Temporal Archmage, the Teferi.
Oh yeah.
So there's a Teferi sort of CEDH Chain Veil deck. I actually have that deck. It's old, so I don't think it's like tier one anymore, but it basically tries to get Chain Veil out. And then some artifacts and or, in this case, you could be lands and creatures included here that you can untap and pay for the Chain Veil over and over. So I'll read Chain Veil because it also works with this Teferi. Four mana artifact, legendary. At the beginning of your end step, if you did not activate a loyalty ability of a planeswalker this turn, you lose two life. But you can pay four, tap the Chain Veil, and for each planeswalker you control, you may activate one of its loyalty abilities once this turn as though none of its loyalty abilities have been activated this turn.
Okay.
So if the artifact you've chosen with Teferi who shows the sun slows the sunset is Chain Veil, and the land and the creature you untap with it can produce, you know, at least four mana, then you're in business here because you can now untap the Chain Veil and have enough mana to pay for it over and over.
Yep. So if you're in Bant, which a lot of people have been suggesting, you can have a Bloom Tender, which taps for sometimes up to four or five mana. You can have any land and then the Chain Veil and you activate it forever. But you also, if you just have like a Bounce Land or an Ancient Tomb or a Scorched Ruins or a Lowest Field, you
any
can get
land
a
that,
lot.
You could even like Market Festival on a land, which is something I love to do.
Yeah.
Anything that makes a land tap for like three or four mana.
Yeah, so this is obviously very good. The plus one could also be seen as a way to give a creature vigilance, so that it can kind of protect Teferi if you like go and attack with it and then untap it. But in general, I think people are going to be using this in combo decks. Even just untapping a Grim Monolith or a Mana Vault or any of those types of cards that cost mana to tap Basalt Monolith is going to be pretty powerful. So this Teferi looks to be powerful, but also looks to not necessarily go in every single deck that can play white-blue. You want to, I think, be more combo-y and do more degenerate things with it.
As Teferi does.
As T
generally
does.
That's
thanks.
Just Teferi's brand.
Thanks, Teferi.
All right, let's talk about the next Planeswalker. It is Arlen. She's back. Arlen, the Pax Hope. Two red green, so four mana for a four loyalty Planeswalker. She has Daybound. So if a player casts no spells during their turn, it will become night. She has a plus one ability. Until your next turn, you may cast creature spells as though they had flash, and each creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional plus one counter on it. And then she has a negative three, and the negative three is create two green wolf creature tokens. Now she has Daybound, which means that she has a night side. She can be flipped over, and her nightbound side is a plus two of add a green and a red to your mana pool.
Wow.
And she has a zero ability of until end of turn, Arlen becomes a 5/5 werewolf creature with trample, indestructible, and haste.
Okay.
That backside feels like Gideon to me.
It does. And the front side feels a little bit like Vivian by giving the creatures flash. The play pattern here is play Arlen.
Gideon.
Play Arlen, hope it gets back to your turn, just plus one her, giving all your creatures flash, and then pass the turn, instantly turning her to Nightbound. But I think that's not really going to happen that often in
you're
EDH.
You're usually going to make two wolves, right?
Yeah, you're going to make two wolves. You're not going to sort of pay four mana plus one and hope she doesn't die. But yeah, I mean, four mana for a two wolf creature isn't the worst in the world, but it doesn't seem amazing, because if it's nighttime, she enters on the Nightbound side, and then she just becomes either gives you two mana, or you can make her into like a beater. But that doesn't
neither
seem
is great in Commander, right?
Yeah,
the token creation is the best part.
You don't see Gideon to that degree. You see the Gideon that makes people attack it to control things. You don't really see Gideon because you just want something that's a 5/5.
Right, 5 damage is not enough in our format. It's the token creation that's good, but it's so expensive in that it's negative 3, and she starts with 4 loyalty, to get her back up to get another 2 tokens.
Yeah.
And I don't think you are going to play a spell in Commander that's like, 4 mana, make 2 tokens, that's it. And then also the fact that honestly, like, I don't even know if you would really want her to flip that often, right? Like, you'd rather her be on the token creation side. I guess she ramps you. She makes some mana on the other side, so maybe you do that. I don't know. She just doesn't seem that great to me.
If you're making the werewolf deck, you can definitely put this in there. Otherwise, I wouldn't get too excited about it. The next is Ren and Seven. Very cute. Three green for a legendary planeswalker, Ren. You can plus one it. I guess it's like a creature beast. It comes with five loyalty, by the way. The plus one is reveal top four cards of your library. Put all land cards revealed this way into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. The zero on Ren and Seven is put any number of land cards from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. The minus three is create a green tree folk creature token with reach, and this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control. And the minus eight, return all permanent cards from your graveyard to your hand. You get an emblem with you have no maximum hand size. So the plus one, you can draw as many lands as you reveal. The zero, you put any number of lands on the battlefield tapped. And the minus three, you're making like a construct, but this case for lands.
A land struct.
Land struct. So, a card this reminded me of is Jadzi, who I played on Game Nights. On the flip side is Journey to the Oracle, which basically says the same thing. You put any number of lands onto your battlefield, from your hand onto the battlefield, but in this case, not tapped.
It seems like the most powerful thing that Ren and Seven has going on. There is some card draw and self-mill going on with that plus one. Yeah, there's a bunch of cards that go well with that. Put all the lands from your hand into your... onto the battlefield.
Yeah.
There's stuff like Storm Cauldron, which is a 5-mana artifact, and it says each player may play an additional land during each of his or her turns, but whenever a land is tapped for mana, return it to its owner's hand.
Yeah.
So there's a way for you, oh, I don't care, I'll tap all my mana, then that'll all come back to my hand, but then I'll replay it. And it actually is great because I don't think Ren and Seven says they enter. Oh, no, they do. Yeah. They enter the battlefield.
For Ren and Seven, they do, but that
Jazzy, also, they don't.
Yeah, but Storm Cauldron basically makes everyone else not be able to play the game because it locks them out because they can't tap their lands, otherwise it bounces in their hand.
Yeah, every time they play a spell that's three CMC or more, they actually lose mana on the battlefield for the next turn.
Yeah, now obviously if you had that thing that untaps stuff when it comes in, that'd be great in this kind of deck.
Oh, Amulet Vigor.
Amulet Vigor, yeah.
Yeah. Maloku seems really good. This one you put down, Jimmy.
Yeah, it's a 4 and a blue flyer. You can pay one to return the land you control to its owner's hand to create a 1/1 blue illusion creature token. So you can pay the mana and then use that to bounce the land, bounce every single land on the battlefield that you have, and then Ren and Seven bops it all back onto the battlefield. So kind of like, you know, you don't lose the lands necessarily.
I put down Sunder, which is three blue instant, return all lands to their owner's hand.
That's actually a really good play. I should have put this in my Jadzi deck now that I think about it.
No, you should not have. That is mean. It's mean, but it is the fact that if Ren and Seven's out and you bounce everybody else's lands and yours, but then go zero, put mine back out, and everybody else is stuck to one land per turn, you're pretty much going to win that game. You just one-sided Armageddon.
Yeah.
So that part's pretty interesting. I think Ren and Seven, it's a lot of mana. It's 5 mana to get that thing out.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we're actually going to see it that much.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. There's a couple cycles in the set. That's all the Planeswalkers, by the way. There's a couple of cycles in the set, which we will talk about briefly here. There is an adversary cycle.
So this is these are all creatures that have a similar ability, similar to Strive, which allows you to pay an additional mana cost when they enter the battlefield.
Kind of like
and,
Kicker, too.
Yeah, a little bit like Kicker. And then when you do X times that thing. So maybe it's plus one counters, or you get an additional effect that... Oh, no, actually, I think it's always adding plus one counters, and then there's an additional effect that varies from color to color. So
yeah, the effect based on how many counters you put on.
Correct. Yeah, so we'll read through just the names, and then we'll just give a brief description of all of them. White's is Intrepid Adversary. It's basically a lord, gives +1/+1 to other creatures based on how many counters is on it. The blue one is Spectral Adversary. It's the best one by far. It has flash and allows you to phase out artifacts, creatures, and or enchantments. So this is like
instant. You get to pick one thing per counter that went on it.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. It's instant speed protection in blue in this kind of like weird phasing out way. I guess they're just really bringing back phasing.
I think they've learned that phasing is actually pretty good in a commander setting and that it doesn't cause an ETB to go off.
Yeah.
But it can be used as on defense and offense too, right? Phase it out to get rid of a blocker, or they can't use it, or use it on your own stuff to save it.
Black is Tainted Adversary. This makes decayed zombies, which we don't like.
And for some reason costs more
than
the other ones. The other ones are one in a color, and this is two in a color.
Maybe to balance for limited? Kicker. Who knows?
I guess the red one's also two in a color.
Yeah, red is Bloodthirsty Adversary. This lets you cast spells from a graveyard with mana value 3 or less, but it costs
sorcery only.
Yeah, but it costs a lot to do.
Well, it's 3 mana value or less, and you got to pay 3 mana per kicker, basically, to cast the instant sorceries. But you are reusing. It's kind of like Passing Flames, but like
there might be some combos here.
Yeah.
And then green is Primal Adversary, which turns your lands into 3/3 wolf creatures.
Yeah, the blue one is definitely the best one because it's protection, and it also could be used on offense. You can, and as flash.
Yep.
So you can flash it in, and if you pay 6 mana, you can basically phase out 2 things, and it's only artifacts, creatures, or enchantments. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could turn off a key enchantment for, you know.
Oh, that's right, for someone else.
For someone else during the whole rotation of the table. Upkeep, if somebody goes to board wipe, you can be like, boom, flash this in, save 2 or 3 things. Yeah, it's got a little bit of a Teferi's protection vibe to it, not the full-on thing, obviously, yeah. But blue often also holds mana open, so the fact that you can do that with like a card draw spell in your hand, or have this just in case somebody board
goes wrong, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely makes it, I think, more versatile than sort of the other ones. I think the red one's also decent in that just reusing your 3 CMC instants and sorceries.
Cheating of mana cost. Yeah,
it can be good.
Yeah, I like the point you made about blue, because you are holding up sometimes 5 mana, 6 mana counter spells at this point.
Yeah.
There are very powerful ones, but you know, if you don't do anything with that counterspell, then having a spectral adversary or whatever might be able to give you that extra flexibility.
Yeah, it might be like nobody did anything crazy, but on the end step before my turn, I'm going to flash this in and get rid of a couple of key things out on the board so that I know I'm safe or can do things on my turn.
Yeah, or that's actively stopping me from doing my strategy. Let me get rid of that and I'll continue going. Or upkeep, get rid of your Great Henge, stop using it for this turn. We have to slow this player down as much as possible.
Yep. Okay, and the second cycle is called the Vision Cycle. So in the set boosters, they released some cards, and we'll be talking about a few of them, where this is the only place you can get them is in set boosters. And there's a cycle in the set boosters, again.
That or the Channel Fireball Marketplace.
Yeah, yeah. There's a cycle here where they're all sorceries. They have varying costs, but they all flash back for 10 mana. But their flashback costs can be reduced by the CMC of your commander, is that right?
Yeah, on the battlefield or in the command zone. So if you, so each of them, the flashback is 8 generic mana, and then for all the colors, it's either white, white, blue, blue, black, black, red, red, or green, green. But if you have a commander in the command zone or on the battlefield, then that 10, then that 8, and then the colors is reduced by the amount of mana value of
the
your
generic
commander.
Mana is reduced.
Yeah. So if your commander is Brigmos, which I believe is an 8 CMC commander or 8 mana value commander, then this just costs red, red.
These cards can be a reward for playing a high CMC commander. Like if you play, what's the kobold's name? If you play Rogrok, then it won't reduce the flashback cost at all.
Yeah. Again, but if you have Rogrok and a partner that is Kamal,
huge, yeah,
then it does, because it's any commander that you control. And the cool thing is, it doesn't need to be on the battlefield. Can't be in your hand, but it could just be sitting in your command zone, which means that even
probably if it's high CMC.
Yeah, and if it's been killed like twice, it's sitting there forever, these cards will still get their mana value reduced.
Okay, so there are 5 of these, 1 for each color. There is Visions of Glory, which is the white one that makes as many 1/1 human tokens as creatures you control.
Okay.
There's the blue one, Visions of Duplicity, that exchanges exchanges control of 2 creatures you don't control.
Okay.
That one's weird. Visions of Dread, your opponent puts a creature of their choice from their graveyard onto your battlefield.
Okay.
I think that one seems great. Because it's only 2 and a black.
True, true.
So even if you only get like 3 1 drops, it's still pretty good.
Yeah, if it's 2 and a black and your commander is Kamal or whatever, Kamal and
the black. Well, the initial cost of just 2 and a black, play it.
Not bad.
Is pretty good. And then the fact that you can flash it back is just kind of gravy.
Yeah, so you could have this effect twice for 5 mana.
I mean, a lot of times you're going to get like a Secure Tribe Elder and a couple other random creatures that got milled or something. And if somebody's self-milling, sometimes they don't have a choice. They're just like, I have to give you the shield. It's all that's there.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's ways to also selectively sort of get rid of people's graveyards too at this point. There's lots of graveyard hate. The next is Visions of Ruin, which makes each opponent sack an artifact. For each artifact sacrifices this way, you create a treasure token. Doesn't seem that good.
I think this is okay. It's not great, but like you kill 3 things almost always like mana rocks and stuff running around and get three treasures.
Yeah,
so really only costs you 1 red.
Yeah. And then the last one is Visions of Dominance. It's the green one, and you get a +1/+1 counter on a creature, then you double those counters. And that one is definitely not exciting.
Very niche, and because you have to be in a 1/1 counters deck, because just putting, you know, a 1/1 counter and then another 1/1 counter on something is not great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think the black one's actually quite good, and I could see being played just in general, because 2 and a black, each of your opponent chooses a creature in their graveyard, and you get that creature.
No, it's target opponent.
Oh, I thought it was each opponent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I read it wrong. Because each opponent is on the red one,
On the red one, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, well, that makes it way worse. Never mind. I'm off of the black one now.
Now, notably, if your commander is 6 CMC, then the flashback cost is going to be 2 white-white or blue-blue or whatever. If it's 5 CMC, then it's going to be 3 white-white, blue-blue. So these aren't necessarily unplayable if you have a lower CMC commander, But
I think they are.
They get way better. And that's why I think Visions of Dread / Visions of Ruin are the only closest one that kind of are.
I think Visions of Ruin is still good, but I'm off the black one now.
I've never seen the blue effect do anything cool, but maybe we just haven't had in our play group. Because there are times when someone plays an Eldrazi and you can be like, switch that with a 1/1 elf.
But then one of your other opponents still has an Eldrazi.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get the Eldrazi.
And it doesn't give you immunity from that card either, so they could still swing it willy-nilly.
I mean, you can make like Sholo and like try and make a deal. Like, hey, if I give you that Eldrazi, will you promise not to swing it at me?
Let's not make like Sholo, because I died to Sholo. Spoiler alert.
All right. Okay, so those are the two cycles. We've gone through the Planeswalkers. We have all the cards in the various colors to go here, but we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
All right, we're back. We're talking about the bam, 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 and you 99.
Bam, bam. Okay.
The cards in your 99 from Midnight Hunt. If you didn't catch that,
that's
or if you just started the video halfway through, that'd be weird. All right, we're going to start with the white cards here. We're going to go through all the colors, then we'll do multicolored, colorless, and lands. We'll do it in Wooburg order to make it easy. This first one's pretty interesting.
It's one of the best white commons ever printed, I think.
So it is Cathar Commando. One and a white for a 3/1 human soldier with flash, but you can pay one, sack it, and destroy target artifact or enchantment.
So two and a white, basically flash speed, you get to blow up an artifact or enchantment.
So this is obvious comparisons to Reclamation Sage.
But in white.
Yeah, I think it's better in some ways than Rex Sage, right? In that it has flash. And Rex Sage does not have flash. So that's a pretty big thing, because often somebody plays an enchantment or artifact.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to get rid of it like on the spot, because if they get to use it, then you're going to be in trouble. So that part's good. But I would say that having to sack the creature is generally not as good as an ETB effect, even though white and depending on what you pair it with have ways to kind of replay this thing from the graveyard and get it back. I think it's generally better to have an ETB that, maybe that's not even right. Is it easier to blink than it is to reanimate? Maybe that's not true.
I would say also like green cards love to get stuff back from the graveyard to your hand. Yeah. And white is shown a lot more times of like to get stuff back from your graveyard to the battlefield. That's
which could still be good.
Yeah, so I think it's actually kind of a split.
It is a 2 CMC, so yeah, Sun Titans and the Teshars
back,
and stuff
all
can
that
get
stuff.
It. Yeah, yeah.
The difference in this is that Cathar Commando has flash, so it has to enter first, everyone sees it, and then you have to pay the cost to sacrifice it. So there are actually two steps. A card like Cross and Grip, for instance, hits it, stops the stack entirely. So Cathar Commando opens up like a couple of windows for people to interact with it or do things in response.
They could do that at Rex Sage though.
Yeah, so I think, I don't know, I think Rex Sage is, they're still very specific, because I think Enter the Battlefield is still really powerful, but I would argue that Cathar Commando is one of the best removal spells in white, especially mono white, for problem cards.
And the fact that we're comparing it to Rex Sage, which is a very highly played card,
yeah,
right? Yeah. Like, Rexage just is a very good card that a lot of decks use. Well, white getting a card that's at least in the argument for as good as that card is pretty good. So I like Cathar's Commando. I think we're going to see it on the battlefield quite a bit.
Yep, and it has Command in its name, so we have to like it.
This next one is really interesting.
Yeah, it's Curse of Silence. It's one white mana for an enchantment aura curse. Enchant player. As Curse of Silence enters the battlefield, choose a card name. Players or spells with the chosen name enchanted player cast cost two more mana to cast. Whenever enchanted player casts a spell with the chosen name, you may sacrifice Curse of Silence if you do draw a card. Now, you might think, wait, why is this good for Commander? Well, there's always going to be one spell that your opponents probably want to cast, and that's
And you know what
commander.
It is, too. You're not guessing, like, is that in your hand?
Yep, it's Cathar Commando, the one in the white card we just know. Yeah, it's their Commander itself.
Yeah, you just look over in their command zone and go, well, I know you want to cast that card. I'll just name that one.
And create an instant command tax on it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting, and I think could be quite powerful, especially against really powerful decks like the Narsets and the Solvalas.
Uh-huh.
And there's certain decks that I think, you know when that commander hits the battlefield, it's going to take over the game and you're going to have to either destroy it on sight or you risk losing on their next turn or whatever. The Korvalds and the thing like that. And with like my strategy with those commanders is usually like hold my removal, try and kill it the first time and just kill it immediately the second time. And then by then they've probably been set far enough back that you have a chance in that game. And this can sort of pre-kill it, right? Pre-slow them down, where you're like, turn one, boom, Korvald. Now you're like, oh, we can take a breath here because they have at least an extra turn probably, or maybe even two before they'll be able to get the commander out.
Right, you'll slow them down just enough. This is also really good against decks like Shadowborn Apostles because you don't have to sacrifice the Curse of Silence when the player casts the spell. It can just be a permanent tax on that card.
Against Shadowborn Apostles or Dragon's Approach, it's brutal.
Yeah, but it is kind of cool that this does replace itself, so it's not a dead card, but it does require the player. Sometimes the player just might not cast their commander too, which I've seen happen plenty of times.
But a lot of times that's a win, right? Against Muldrotha, they don't cast their commander, well, their deck's a lot worse. You know, Joda, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fact that once they finally get it out, and this is, like, not doing anything at that point, you can cash it in for the card, and then maybe you deal with the commander in another way, or maybe you've slowed him down enough that you're more set up than you would be. I actually like this card quite a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing, especially for the more mono-white or the two-color white builds. This gives, I think, a pretty interesting option that plays in a very different way. You don't see this kind of effect very often.
Yeah, there are other cards that allow you to name cards and just they cannot cast those cards. And those feel more mean than this. This is like in a nice middle area where it's like, listen, I'm not stopping you from ever playing it. I'm just making it a little bit harder. And I think that's more palatable to most people than something like, is it Nevermore? That's just like, hey, until you get rid of this champion, you just cannot cast it.
Yeah, I don't think people will be too upset if you Curse of Silence them, especially if their commander is really powerful. That doesn't seem like something to me that's going to be like a game breaker, if that makes sense.
Hopefully. People get upset about all kinds of things, so you never know.
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't think it would be super warranted in that case. All right, one more card from white here.
Yeah, surprisingly. This is actually a really interesting card. It's Vanquish the Horde. Is that Audric on the front? It is. 6 white for a sorcery. This spell costs 1 less to cast for each creature on the battlefield. Destroy all creatures.
White?
This could cost white.
Yeah, white Blasphemous Act, right?
Yeah. When you're casting a board wipe, what's the chances there are at least 6 creatures on the battlefield? Pretty good, right?
In Commander? Super good. I mean, very rarely would you need to cast a board wipe if there's only like 2 or 3 creatures.
Yep, and the regular rate that white has for board wipes is 4 mana wipe the board. Only cards like Doomscar in recent history have sort of beaten that and gotten down to 1 white. Vanquish the Horde could potentially be just white mana.
I think most of the time it'll be something close to that, maybe 1 white.
Yeah.
It feels like you would almost never need it in a situation where it's at least Wrath of God, where it's 2 white, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really like this because, in general, the downside of playing a board wipe is that you use so much mana on the board wipe that it's hard for you to be the first one to redeploy your stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons Blasphemous Act is so good and gets played in almost all red decks is because the efficiency of 1 red mana kill all the creatures means that you kill all creatures and then you're the first one to repopulate the board. You're like, okay, now play 2 or 3 creatures, and everybody else is kind of behind you. Whereas if you play a big high mana cost board wipe, you go board wipe, go, and everybody else puts their stuff back on the board before you do. So I like this a lot. I think it instantly becomes one of the best.
This feels like a staple.
Besides the ones that can be one-sided, like Austere Command and things like that, this feels like the best white board wipe all of a sudden.
Is it better than Wrath of God?
Oh, yeah. I think it's not even close.
I
mean,
so too.
It doesn't say can't be regenerated, but that bit rarely comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only times I could see this being bad is like one-on-one situation, you're just top decking cards, they play a creature that needs to die, and the board wipe is acting like a single target removal spell. But
yeah, against the like Narset type decks where like it has hexproof, so you really need a board wipe to get rid of it.
Yeah.
This doesn't look great because you usually want your 4-mana board wipe to just get rid of one creature, but that's pretty rare these days that that's really what you're trying to do with a board wipe.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. All right. Those are all the white cards that we're going to talk about. Again, we're trying to pare this down. So we're going to go to blue here. And we only have two blue cards we want to talk about.
All right.
The first one is Sludge Monster. 3 blue-blue for a horror 5/5. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, you put a slime counter on up to one target creature. And then non-horror creatures with slime counters on them lose all abilities and have base power and toughness 2/2.
Okay, this is a really interesting card because it's similar to a card that I hate, which is Humility.
Yeah.
But this only does it on single things one at a time. Hopefully no one has a Changeling or a Horror out because it does not get sludged. But
true, if you're like, oh man, the one creature I really want to turn off is a Horror.
Mirror Entity is like, nope.
What kind of bad luck is that?
Yeah. But being able to just get rid of everything and make something a toughness 2/2 forever, or at least until this leaves the battlefield, is interesting. Seems like a fun card to flicker, maybe with Brago or Rune.
Yeah, I also think, because it's on attack and ETB too.
Yeah.
So you can get some attacks in. It's very powerful, this effect, on commanders in general, because people are used to having to recast or the commander dies or whatever. But, it can do sort of a Song of the Dryads type of deal here, where it is a 2/2, so they can block with it or whatever to try and make it die so they can recast it or whatever. But yeah, then maybe you can get put another sludge counter on it by attacking or whatever. And again, I think there's some uses here that'll be interesting. It is 5 mana. It's a high cost for this type of effect, and they can just kill the sludge monster. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And notably, when you blink it, the moment it's off the battlefield, all those creatures return to being normal. They just have a weird slime counter on them. And then when it comes back in, they're like, oh gosh, and turn back into 2/2s. So they can do something in that moment.
They're like the senator or whatever from the first X-Men movie.
Oh.
And he just turns into the water or whatever.
Okay, next up is Curse of Surveillance. It's a 4 and a blue enchantment or a curse enchant player. At the beginning of enchanted player's upkeep, any number of target players other than that player each draw cards equal to the number of curses attached to that player. Okay, it's another curse. Definitely a great way to just make one person... if they're the arch enemy, it's like, you're arch enemy Josh, I'm going to cast this on you on your upkeep. I choose all of us players to draw a card for each curse attached to you.
It's, I'm not sure how to think about it because it's 5 mana and I don't want my 5 mana card to draw my opponent's cards.
It can choose just you, by the way.
You can choose any number
of cards.
It doesn't say
players.
You choose, though.
But I believe it's because it's you control the enchantment. You get to say any number of target players other than that player.
Oh, okay.
Because other than that player.
Oh, okay. So you can actually just make deals, too. Like, hey, you want to draw cards? You want to draw cards? All right. Yeah. Well, what are you going to give me?
Yeah.
Oh, that part, that makes it a lot better. Now you can turn it to Sholo.
Yeah,
he's my go-to like political guy now because that Crater Hoof move was so sweet.
Insane, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but this is 5 mana still, and you have to wait until their upkeep. So you could, it's going to be faster than waiting for the full turn cycle. So I think it's still a little expensive for what it's doing, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I wish it were like 4 or even 3 mana because the base usage is going to be this allows you to draw one extra card per turn.
Mm-hmm. On their turn, yeah.
Yeah. Per rotation.
Yeah, per rotation.
Yeah. Obviously, if you're in a curse deck, it gets way better because you might have 3 or 4 curses on them, and then it's 5 mana, draw 3 or 4.
Yeah, this by itself, not so much, but yeah. In the curse deck, I think this is kind of cool, especially if it's like, goes to your upkeep, everyone draws 4 cards or whatever.
If you really need that one answer to that one thing, you can help people find it, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for the blue cards. We're moving on to black here. Our first card is Ghoulish Procession.
And uncommon.
It's 1 and a black for a... enchantment. I found this to be quite good in limited. Whenever one or more non-token creatures die, anybody's, not just yours, you create a 2/2 black zombie creature token with decayed, and then this ability triggers only once each turn. So you can get up to one extra zombie, but it has decayed per turn. The fact that this is only 2 mana is what I think makes it like pretty usable. Yeah. And it really turns into, you can sort of sack your non-token stuff twice in Aristocrats decks. Also just gives you incidental value from other creatures dying on the battlefield. And the fact that it's a 2/2 decayed zombie and it can only happen once, I don't think your opponents are going to play around it as much as they might some other effects.
I think they're just going to be like, whatever, just get the 2/2.
It's just like Smothering Tide. They're like, fine, have a treasure.
Yeah. In this case, though, if your deck is going to take advantage of having all the sack fodder, so the Korvold decks any of the decks that run Phyrexian Altar of Ashnod's Altar of Ultra Dementia, this is just a great way to just sort of accrue value over time. I could totally see this if you get this down turn 2 making like 20 zombies by the end of the game.
Yeah, even just slowly, just like, oh, make one on your turn because you're always sacking something, and then make one other throughout the course of whatever's happening on the other player's turns. And before you know it, that's kind of accrues a lot of value.
If you have Ashnod's Altar, each turn cycle, you could get up to potentially six more mana from three different creatures dying.
Right, you'd have to do it on everybody's turn, but you could definitely make that work.
Yeah, in general, I think creatures probably, they are generally dying on the battlefield in one way or the other, Secret Tribal or whatever it is. So Ghoulish Procession sees a lot of those, makes you a lot of tokens. I like it.
And Aristocrat's one of the most popular strategies out there, so I think we're going to be seeing this card a decent amount. All right.
All right, this next one's a fun one. It's Lord of the Forsaken. 4BB for a 6/6 creature demon with flying and trample. Flample. You can pay a black to sacrifice another creature. Target player mills 3 cards. And you can pay 1 life to add colorless mana and spend this mana only to cast the spell from your graveyard.
Pay 1 life, add colorless mana is channel.
Yep.
That card's banned. Now, it's restricted mana. You can only use that to cast things from your graveyard. But still, that's not a super high bar to clear, right? There's a lot of ways to play cards out of your graveyard. Like,
especially in black.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of mechanics that do it, too. There's the, there's Flashback, of course, which is in this set. And then there's all kinds of, like, Underworld Breach.
Carador.
Yawgmoth's Will.
Kess.
So, this card seems like it's going to be extremely powerful because I play Treasonous Ogre in decks, and that's pay 3 life for a mana, and that card feels broken when you do it. This is pay 1 life for a mana.
Yeah, and it feels like, okay, don't overrate it because it's only cards from your graveyard, but if you're in the deck that is doing this even to a small degree, you are all in on this, I think.
Yeah, if you've got Past in Flames, Underworld Breach, Yawgmoth's Will type stuff in your deck, because this with Underworld Breach feels like it could be very easily be incredibly broken, because not only can you pay the life for the mana, you can also mill yourself for the cards for the escape cost. So there's got to be, listen, I didn't go super deep on it thinking about it, but there's got to be some combo where like there's either a fully colorless spell or one that only has one colored pip in it that you can sort of more or less go infinite with, you know, or do something very, very powerful very early by spending 30 life.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, audience, this is your quiz for the day then. You have Lord of the Forsaken out, you have Underworld Breach, and you have a Death Render. You can choose any commander that fits those color identities. What would be a fun, I guess, degenerate or broken or
fun,
powerful way to use Lord of the Forsaken? Maybe you don't even need Death Render. Let us know. It'd be interesting. Or maybe it's like a Nimm's Death Mantle type thing. There's a lot of interesting things to be done.
Kyrick seems like it's a good piece of the puzzle because it gives you pay life for the black part of spells. So and then now you got pay life for the colors, pay life for the black.
Yeah. And then there's also the card that gives you cards every time you pay life for something too. So maybe there's that.
Yeah. I just think this card is very, very powerful. I don't know all the combos off the top of my head, but there's going to be a bunch. And in general, I just think it'll be good if you look at your deck and you're like, hey, I have 20 ways to play things out of graveyards or whatever, then this card probably wants to be in there.
Yeah, totally. All right. Ooh, next up is, I think,
this card's really
one of the most exciting cards I've seen in quite a while. It's also legendary, which is interesting because it means it can get searched up by a lot of different cards in these colors.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. It's called the Meat Hook Massacre.
The Meat Hook Massacre.
Gross.
You know, before we explain the card, if you're looking at the art, Gabby Sparts on Twitter noticed something that I had thought about when I first saw the card, too. That that hook in the foreground, it looks like a monkey. Two arms and a head.
It really does.
When I first looked at it, I can't stop seeing that, but it's actually like a hand being poked through with a hook.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, I just want to call that out.
What if that monkey's legs is longer or the tail is wrapped
around it? Or it's just like, bending its leg, you know?
Yeah, it's like mid-action. It's like flying towards camera.
Exactly, as monkeys do. They kind of do.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Shia LaBeouf's do. Okay. it's X black for a legendary enchantment.
Enchantment? I thought this was a sorcery the first time I read it.
Me too. And I was astounded when I read it again and again and again.
Yeah.
Okay. When the Meat Hook Massacre enters the battlefield, each creature gets -X/-X until end of turn.
That's actually just pretty good.
Just by itself, that's
great.
Black
Sun Zenith is already kind of worse than that.
Yep.
In that it's black and X to do that. This is black and X to do that.
Yeah.
But then, they're not done.
Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent loses 1 life. Aristocrats. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, you gain 1 life.
Now, remember, it's an enchantment. So it comes out, it gives everything -X/-X, and then it stays on the battlefield having that sort of Zulaport cutthroat effect, Blood Artist effect on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. You mentioned something here which is interesting and a little annoying about this card in that when a creature dies, you have to clock whether it's yours or somebody else's, and then the effect is slightly different.
Yeah.
And And like keeping track of that is honestly like a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's already hard enough with all of the other Aristocrat effects that are different. Like Zulaport's a little different than Blood Artist, yeah. And this is definitely different than Mean Hook Massacre. So if you're playing this deck, you need to be on your triggers.
It's a lot of accounting. I wish they were all more similar. I understand this makes it slightly less powerful of a trigger, and they're trying to probably like, well, if it's just Blood Artist, that's way too good. So how do we blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but make it a little.
How do we make it different than Bastion of Remembrance or whatever? But anyway, I mean, the outcome, though, is that this card is extremely powerful.
Yeah, so let's do the power rankings between...
I think this immediately becomes the second best black board wipe. That's, I'm going to say that at the start. Okay, go.
Okay, so we have Toxic Deluge.
That's the first best.
Black Sun Zenith, Meat Hook Massacre, and Damnation. I think those take the top four spots of black board wipes now. Maybe you could add in, like, the ones that are, like, draw cards.
Decree of Pain.
Decree of Pain types, but... Honestly,
and Garruk's Wake, just because it's one-sided, but it costs 9 mana.
Minus X is one of my favorite things to see.
Get rid of Indestructible, and that matters all the time.
Yeah.
I think this is better than Black Sun Zenith most of the time.
I think so, too.
Just because it costs less mana, and it has two additional like effects that stick around after it's gone.
Yeah.
I do believe Toxic Deluge is better just because for 3 mana, you can usually wipe the entire board. This is going
to
cost you,
you
a lot more
mana. You have to pump mana into it.
Yeah.
I would actually put Damnation almost before Black Sun Zenith because just having a 4 mana board wipe in black is very good.
I agree with you because Black Sun Zenith to get rid of the whole board often costs like 8 mana.
Yeah. Or more.
Or more, yeah. So, but I think this is better than Damnation because I think that the fact that you get the Aristocrat's triggers on an enchantment after this resolves just puts it ahead of it enough that it's just definitely worth it.
I love the Monkey Massacre. Because look,
the poor monkey.
It's like the guy in the back is trying to kill another monkey. And this one's like,
I'll get out of here.
It's gonna get me out of here. Okay, that's gonna do it.
We're gonna see the hell out of the Meat Hook Massacre. There's gonna be a lot of those running.
I think so too. Yeah, it's gonna be definitely a good one to pick up on the Channel 5 Marketplace. Okay, all right. Next up, we are moving into red. Two cards here. The first is Moon Veil Regent. 3 in a red for a creature dragon 4/4 flying. Whenever you cast a spell, you may discard your hand. If you do, draw a card for each of that spell's colors. And when Moonveil Regent dies, it deals X damage to any target, where X is the number of color among permanents you control. All right, that last line of text, not that relevant. The middle one, though, after flying, this is actually interesting because if you're in a deck that wants to get down to a very low number of cards in hand or just have zero, then every time you cast a spell, it's basically cantripping itself. If it's one color.
You cast a spell, you have no cards in hand, so I'll discard my no cards to draw one.
Draw a card, yeah.
Yeah. And that's if it's monocolored, yeah.
If it's two colored, then you get to draw two cards. So
there's not a lot of commander decks that just are going to be hellbent that often, though.
No. But I think if you're playing like Locust God or Argent the Shifting Flame, those are the ones that want to discard your hand. Mind Moil, is that the name of the card? Yeah. So there's a lot of, I think, use of it in that world. I honestly think this might just see more like standard historic play because it's a mono red aggro deck. They get down to just Moonveil Regent on the board. Top deck. Great. Cast it, draw spell. Top deck.
The one thing is there are some decks running around that care about like they're kind of like multicolored tribal.
Yeah,
how many colors are in the things, you know, Ramos, things like that,
right?
So this might be like really good in those decks because those ones you're saying if I'm below two cards, most of the cards in my deck are either five color or three color.
Yeah,
and we'll just sort of cycle through that way.
It's cast a five color spell, draw five cards, discard your hand. That's like looking closer to Wheel of Fortune status.
Yeah, and if you have some flashbacks, some play from your graveyard, Underworld Breaches, if you have some madness cards or whatever, you're also discarding those cards, so there could be some usage there.
Yeah.
Interesting card.
Interesting card indeed.
This next one is not super interesting in that this effect has existed for a while, but it hasn't really existed in red like this.
Yeah, mono red specifically.
Yeah, so it's Ardent Elementalist, 3 in a red for a 2/1 human shaman. When it enters the battlefield, return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. This is basically Archaeomancer.
But better because it's not two blue pips in it. It's just 3 and red.
Yeah, so, I mean, Archaeomancer sees, I think we wrote it down here, it is in 24,000 decks on EDH Rec.
Wow.
Which is a lot, like 7 or 8% of all decks with blue. So I believe this will be a very staple-y card. And the types of things you can do with Ardent Elementalist in Commander, this effect can actually often be better than something like Snapcaster Mage. Because you don't have to exile the card after you use it. So you get it back to your hand, and then you use it. And then if you blink Ardent Elementalist, or maybe the card you played, you know, blinks Ardent. Like, imagine it's Ghostly Flicker.
Yeah.
And you go, boom, Ghostly Flicker. You flicker Ardent Elementalist and something else, get Ghostly Flicker back to my hand again, do the same thing, and you can get into those types of loops. These cards are very powerful.
Yeah, I might put this in my Neheb deck because there are a lot of times you just want that, you know, one in a red, each opponent takes 3 damage spell back because it just gives you so much mana.
Or two in red, each opponent takes three damage.
Yeah. The dragon's approach. Oh gosh. Maybe I should just make it the dragon's approach.
It's probably really good.
It probably is really good.
You get 9 mana back every time you cast one.
Yeah. Another thing to note is that red typically has this with randomized things like Charmbreaker Devils. And so being able to specifically pinpoint the card you want is brand new for red, I think. I don't think this effect happens very often in red, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I've often played Archaeomancer and then Mnemonic Wall as my second one of that effect. And I think this is better than Mnemonic Wall because it's one less mana.
Yep.
So if you're in a blue-red spells deck or, you know, blue-red and X, you probably replace your Mnemonic Walls with that. We're moving to green now. There's exactly one green card we're going to talk about, which I think is good because green doesn't need more good cards.
Yeah.
All right. It is
Augur of Autumn. One green for a 2/3 human.
If this was
druid.
Red, it'd be way better.
Dude, I don't even want to talk about it.
Okay, one green.
You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may play lands from the top of your library and coven. As long as you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, you may cast creature spells from the top of your library.
So,
okay, what?
So 3 mana for a card that says you can play lands off the top of your library. That card exists, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's Courser of Kruphix, and it sees a lot of play.
Yeah.
It's a very good card.
Courser, you have to reveal the top card. You don't have to here. This is closer to Vizier of the Menagerie,
yep.
Because you just look at the top card, and if you have Coven, you can cast it if it's a creature.
Yeah, so it's actually a Courser of Kruphix that becomes also a Vizier of the Menagerie once you get, you know, 3 creatures with different powers. Courser gives you some life when you play the land off the top of your library, but still, I think this is actually better than Courser of Kruphix, right?
I think so, too. If you're playing a lands deck and you're getting life off the lands you get, there's probably more ways that you're benefiting off landfall, and the life gain is one of, like, it's not a high percentage, like, this is the coolest part of my deck.
If it's a life gain deck, obviously, I think Courser is better, but most decks aren't.
I mean, play both, jeez. Augur of Autumn seems really freaking good, though. Again, I don't think green needed an additional version of this effect, because we already have one.
Card advantage for green, but...
Yeah, and it can be creatures, too, which is crazy. But I think this is really good, just in general. I could see this seeing a lot more play in generic just creature decks, not necessarily landfall ones.
It is also a know the top of your library card, so there are decks that want to do that. I don't think this is good enough if that's all you're doing, but the fact that it lets you play land, so it's card advantage, and sometimes lets you play creatures, might sort of bump it into the category where a deck that wants to know the top of its library but doesn't want Courser of Kruphix because it doesn't have enough utility might consider an Augur of Autumn, because, well, now with the playing the creatures thing and knowing the top of my library, it's useful enough.
Yeah. This wins the Jimmy Wong Award of pick this card up. It seems pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it's all of them.
Yeah, I think we're going to see it quite a bit.
All right, next up, we're going to multicolored, and we only have one card here, and I chose it because it's hilarious.
The art is great.
The card is also pretty good. It's Croaking Counterpart. You want to read it?
Yeah, it's one green-blue, so 3 mana for a sorcery. You create a token that's a copy of target non-frog creature, except it's a 1/1 green frog. So you basically get a 1/1 with the abilities of anything you want on the battlefield. But it has flashback for 3 green blue, so you can do that again.
Yep. So this definitely looks good to me, just because you get to copy any creature on the battlefield. 1 green blue, get a Courser or Kruphix. 1 green blue, get a Consecrated Sphinx. 1 green blue, get an Eldrazi.
Mold Drifter. I think you want an ETB mostly just so it does something right now, but I mean, obviously you'll take a Consecrated Sphinx if that exists.
Yeah, you're creating a token copy, so the token will enter the battlefield. Yep. You know, I've recently built a Volo Guide to Monsters deck. It's all about just creating token copies of things, and it seems like a good card in that because you can play it twice.
Yeah, and in that deck you probably have the Parallel Lives and the stuff like that.
And just look at this tokens. Art. Look at this art. Incredible.
The art is awesome.
Okay.
All right, on to colorless cards. We only have one colors card here, but it's kind of a powerhouse. It is Moon Silver Key. Do you want to read it?
Yep. 2 mana for an artifact. You can pay 1 mana and tap and sacrifice Moon Silver Key. Search your library for an artifact card with a mana ability or a basic land card. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Okay. A mana ability means it can tap and add mana to your
doesn't
mana
have to tap.
Pool. Oh, you're right, actually. Yeah.
So Ashnod's Altar, Phyrexian Altar.
Oh, yeah, those are mana
ACI
abilities.
ACI are mana abilities. So that would work. Yeah. So,
or you can just get the basic land. So this seems very good.
Yeah, I like the basic land part because you're liable to have only a certain number of artifacts that fit the bill here, although most decks play a lot of mana rocks, so you can always probably find something, but a basic land may be better than a mana rock if you aren't going to hit your land drop otherwise. Still, people play Trinket Mage. I'll play Trinket Mage in a deck, and literally it can only find like Soul Ring and Sensei's Divining Top in my deck. So just like Moon Silver Key, mostly to find my Soul Ring or my Mana Crypt is going to be very powerful. I think a lot of people will play it just for that. You pay 3 mana for your Mana Crypt, basically makes it a better Worn Power Stone or something like that. I think could be, you know, definitely a good use case for it.
Yeah, this seems really powerful just because of the amount of different things you can find. Like the Great Henge also counts because it creates mana, and Metal Worker, obviously. But
Metal Worker. You can even find Darksteel Citadel because that's an artifact that taps for mana.
Oh, yeah.
All right,
it's not a basic land, but it is an artifact that has a mana ability.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, like with Salt Monolith, right? If you want to go infinite on mana, a lot of times that's a piece of a combo.
Right.
So this can find you a combo piece.
Yeah, it's this artifact card. Even those new artifact lands that are indestructible for Horizons 2, you could color fix with this too.
Yes, exactly. If you're in a werewolf deck, I think you play this just so you can go find the Celestis, which is a mana rock from the new set, but it allows you to control day night cycle. So this is another way to, like, have your control over the day-night cycle, have a tutor basically that does this. I mean, this is a tutor for specific kind of cards, but those kind of cards are very good cards, Mana Vaults and things like that, Grim Monoliths, you know. So I think this is going to be a card that's going to see a decent amount of play just because finding those certain cards. Metalworker, like, just alone, you know. Yep. How many artifact decks just want to find their Metalworker? A lot.
Yeah, Moonsilver Key is pretty interesting. It should grab the Celestis because that's on flavor. That's the whole point of the Moonsilver Key, I think, is to be able to unlock the Celestis.
Okay. We're almost done here, but we have one more thing to talk about, which is lands. There's a new cycle of lands that's never existed before. They only put allied pairs, allied color pairs in this set. So it's going to be one of those land cycles where probably 5 or 10 years from now, we're going to be like, hey, can you create the rest of these?
Yep.
Or who knows? Maybe it could just be in Crimson Vow. There's the rest of them.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice. We don't know. Some people are calling these the slow lands because fast lands is a term used for the lands that come into play tapped if you
control two or less lands.
Two or less lands. And this is coming into play, or sorry, fast lands come into play untapped if you control two or less lands.
Yeah, fast lands out the gate early.
These come into play tapped unless you control two or more lands.
Right, so this is much more commander focused. Obviously, you're going to have two lands in most commander games by turn two.
You kept a three land opening hand, right? You should have, unless your name is Jimmy Wong.
Yeah. I keep five land opening hands these days. And so I think this is going to be very, very useful. Again, there's green, white, white, blue, black, red, and red, green. So if you're going around the color wheel, you can just go white, blue, black, right? So it's all of those allied lands.
I don't play the fast lands myself. I don't know about you, because when you draw them on turn four or five, they're a tap land. They're a guild gate.
You have 100 cards. You never play the fast lands, I think.
But I think I would play these every time because I can just not play them for my first two turns.
Yeah.
And then they're
typically
fine.
You're playing like the Triome or the three color land on your first turn or whatever. And so by the second turn, you know, you're going to want to have these lands much more than the other ones. So I like this quite a lot.
Yeah, I think these are great. I think you're going to play these in almost all the decks that are of these colors.
Yep. And I always like playing the game of, like, can you guess the colors based on the name? Like Haunted Ridge. It's like, okay, black, red. Okay, makes sense. All right. So that does it for our set review of the cards. Josh, what do you think is the most powerful card that we talked about today?
Most powerful. Always hard to quantify what powerful means. It can either mean the top end power of the card at its most powerful, or it can mean the card that is sort of the most consistently powerful across a broad range of things, right? Like Cathar Commando strikes me as a particularly powerful card, not because it does a powerful thing, but because it's so broad in its application that it's powerful in a lot of different circumstances.
Right, you could use it a lot of different places.
Yeah, and I think Moonsilver Key also fits that mold for me, in that I think it's going to go in a lot of decks because it's going to be useful in a lot of situations. But neither of those have like super high top end power. Their ceiling is just really low.
Yeah, that's not like a...
Ceiling's really high. No, ceiling's low, floor's high.
There you go. The ceiling meets the floor. The floor, it's just a weird
things
room.
Things get crushed. I don't know. This metaphor fell apart. Yeah.
I am probably most excited about either... It's one of the two board wipes. It's Meat Hook Massacre or Vanquish the Horde.
Yeah.
Both of them seem just like really solid playables, and you'll see a lot of them. So I enjoy quite those. But Moonsilver Key, the more I think about it, I'm like, that actually... It really can grab so much. It's a combo enabler. It just helps you get a soul ring too in a lot of cases.
Yeah, the worst case scenario of just like go find a basic land, it's never going to be useless, right? It's never dead. But sometimes it has these really powerful applications of just like, find your soul ring.
Yeah.
So,
and it can fix your mana too in a bunch of different ways like we talked about.
Yeah. What card are you personally most excited about? Not most powerful, but you're just excited.
Well, I have to say the mono red one, Moonveil Regent. I've been looking to sort of rebuild the dragon deck that I have into more of a five color shell recently. And Moonveil Regent seems like a really good one to just keep the engine going late game. Or if you keep it three color, then it also seems to be pretty okay.
Yeah, that's cool. You picked a mono red card. Good job. But a mono red card that cares about other colors. Look at that.
Look at that. I'm growing.
Yeah, I was just going to say that exactly. I think Meat Hook Massacre for me, I just think the card's like very good. So I got to buy like 7 to 10 of them off the Channel Fireball Marketplace because like every deck with black, I think, wants Meat Hook Massacre.
Yeah, I basically. Think so. I think so. If you play Toxic Deluge, I think you're in the same world that you would like Meat Hook Massacre too.
Yeah. To the listeners, what singles from Midnight Hunt are you the most excited about? What cards maybe did we miss today? Do we not talk about that you think we definitely should have discussed that have maybe more intricacies, that have more to say than just, hey, play this in a Blink deck? Tell us in the comments below about any cards that you think maybe are going to make a big splash in Commander we're going to see on the battlefield quite often, but we didn't mention.
Mm-hmm. And there's quite a lot, so we'd love to continue that discussion. Make sure you comment. We want to hear what your thoughts are. We're not saying those cards aren't good and shouldn't have made the set review. We just decided not to talk about them.
Yeah, and let us know what you think about us sort of condensing the In the 99 stuff all down to one video. Do you miss the fact that we went into, talked about a lot more, but made a lot more videos? Those videos seem to like taper off as far as views, so I'm guessing most of the audience out there was not super excited about the, you know, fourth In the 99 set review video. So we're trying to address that here, of course. Okay. We need to talk about our new sponsor, channelfireball.com/command. This new marketplace thing is really, really cool. Marketplaces in general are the best place to get... They have two really big advantages. One is the inventory in a marketplace is so much higher than any single store can give you, because we're not talking about one vendor. We're talking about hundreds of vendors from all over the place. And so if you want a certain card, you can always find that card.
Yeah.
And then marketplaces also tend to drive down the prices of everything there because they have direct competitors on that marketplace that are kind of undercutting each other, driving the price down, getting you the lowest cost.
Yeah, you definitely want to check it out. The marketplace is open right now. They're doing giveaways this entire month. If you place an order, you can qualify. You can win some foil signed soul rings by Josh and I from those GP promos. They're giving away a Black Lotus at the end of the month, plus tons of other stuff. Also, we just don't mention this enough, but they are selling other cards outside of Magic cards, Flesh and Blood, Pokemon. So there's a lot of selection there if you're just a general card collector. So check it out. Almost guaranteed you're going to find something that you like and hopefully at a really great price.
And when you get that stuff that you love, if you love it, you don't want it to get hurt / damaged, Ultra Pro is that is the way to go. You want to protect all of your game pieces. You want to make those cards stay in pristine condition.
Oh yeah.
Yep, those Eclipse sleeves are what Jimmy and I use. Satin Tower deck box is the sturdiest thing out there. You really do want to make sure that you protect all your game pieces. Ultra Pro is the way to go. Also, they have all kinds of cool stuff to just spice up your battlefield. You want some fancy metal dice? Ultra Pro's got it. You want wall scrolls to hang on your wall? Ultra Pro's got it. So you can either spice up your battlefield or your game room.
And I use all of their binders to store my collection.
Oh, yeah. The Mythic Collection binders are so classy, too.
And they have colored ones, too, so I color-coded stuff. Okay.
Oh, man, I'm so organized. OCD. I don't do any of that. I'm like, where's a card? I don't know.
All right. On to the end set where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic. This one actually is somewhat tied to the world of Magic because it features two of our very good friends, Jacob Bertrand and Shola Mardueña. They have a brand new podcast.
Yeah, our two buddies who are stars on the Netflix show Cobra Kai, they just started a podcast called Lone Lobos.
Nice.
Where they kind of like just they're just having discussions amongst the two of them so far. I think at the time we're recording this, there's only one episode. I think they're going to release weekly, so there might be a couple more by now by the time you're listening. But Sholo and Jacob are just really cool guys, really personable guys, really charismatic guys.
Oh, so charismatic.
Yeah, so they just pick some topics and talk about it. On this last one, I found it really interesting because they were talking about like online dating or internet datings.
Oh, which, I have to check it out then.
Yeah, it's super interesting, not just because they're sort of... You know, they're younger, they're in their early 20s, and so their perspective is interesting to me, but also, like, they're famous people, so it is interesting to hear how the world of dating, online dating, works when you are, like, a famous 20-year-old.
Yeah, you know? Someone might think they're being catfished by them, but no, it's actually the guy from Cobra Kai who's interested in you.
So that part's pretty interesting, you know, they had a lot of interesting perspectives like that. One of the things I think they said that really struck home with me, they were talking about, like, online discourse and discussion and people posting like GIFs.
Yeah.
I know a lot of you call it GIFs. Sorry, it's GIFs. But anyway, they were saying how like anytime I see somebody in an online conversation like use a GIF, I know they're old. Because that's what old people do.
No! No! I feel seen. Not in the right way.
And I was like, I thought about it. I was like, you know what? It's kind of true.
Yeah. I think maybe it's because we take the time to look for the GIF and search it up and then post it in and be like, I think this is a good one. And it's like, yeah, that is just old boomer-esque behavior.
Oh, yeah. I got called a boomer. I'm not a boomer. But they said anybody over 35 is a boomer, which is not true.
Not true. I'm called elder millennials. Okay.
I'm Gen X.
Yeah, Gen X.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Someone called me a geriatric millennial the other day. And I was like, what? How dare you?
Wow.
Yeah, that was a rough one to stomach. Okay.
All right, so and I'm sure Jimmy and I will probably appear on their show at some point. They've been talking about having us out on guests.
Oh, cool, cool.
But Lone Lobos, you can find it anywhere you find your podcasts, Spotify or whatever. I think I found it on Spotify. So
if you're a Cobra Kai fan, definitely listen in. I'm sure they're gonna be talking about a lot from that show.
And you
as well.
Saw them on game nights and stuff. They're funny guys.
Yeah.
All right. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone, which is growing and growing. If you noticed a few months ago, we went through the hiring process, and a lot of those people are starting with the team or have started or are soon starting. So we've got Arthur Meadowcroft, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Jamie Block, who is our new writer, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, Truck Ty, and then we also have a couple new members who at the time you're hearing this will have started, but at the time we're recording it have not yet, Damon Lenz and Shauna Gillis. And we've even got a VFX person who we'll name once he joins the team, is joining in a couple of weeks. So
yeah,
a lot of exciting stuff going on here at the Command Zone. We are definitely like increasing our size, which means we're going to be able to bring you bigger, better, and cooler content, here in the future. We're excited about it.
And a big shout out to everyone that applied. I know that not getting a job can sometimes feel like a bummer or sort of like, ah, darn. But you know, applying to stuff and not getting it is a huge part of the process of life in general. Like, you know, for as an actor, I get rejected 99 times and get said to once, right? I've applied to tons of jobs and not gotten as well. It's a great learning experience. So I hope that everyone that did apply, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's really important. I like what you said there. And also, you know, we had limited job opportunities, right? We had one staff writer we could hire. We had one, you know, just because we're not huge to the point where we can just hire everybody.
And there's going to be more people that are qualified than we can hire.
Yeah, and there was many more. We had over 1,000 people apply for all the jobs.
Wow.
So just going through it was such a thing. And there was often a point where like, you know, we have to choose one person, but we have many qualified candidates. So just because you didn't get it doesn't mean anything. It's just some of that is a little bit luck of the draw. And we did try to let everybody know that we had chosen the position, so you're not sitting there waiting. But if you hadn't heard already or gotten the email and you did apply, like at this point, all the positions are filled. So we did keep everyone's name on file, and there was a lot of people who was like, listen, if I could hire two or three people, I would easily hire these people. So that means that in the future, maybe we contact you and we're like, hey, we didn't, you know, last time it didn't happen, but maybe there's an opportunity now.
Keep your head up. Keep on trying. Up.
All right.
Special thanks to Jeffrey Bomber. He does the living card animations that live behind us on set often and start our show on our YouTube channel. You can find him at Living Cards MTG on Twitter. Did you do this one?
No, this was Patrick. Man.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Ooh, spooky.
Yeah, spooky. That's probably the last time we howl for a while.
Yeah.
So.
We're not the Lone Lobos.
All right. Thanks for watching.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.